You may have seen images of the late Tupac Shakur from the 2012 Coachella Music Festival. A hologram of Shakur was projected to be on stage. The late Roy Orbison will reportedly be used for an international hologram tour 30 years after he passed away.
And that kind of technology is advancing, which could impact the music industry and possibly how fans view their favorite performers. The show's Steve Goldstein, and not a holographic image of him, the real one, is here with more. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mark. You know, for good or bad, I'm here in the flesh.
It's good. So
I spoke with Todd Richman, director of the Mixed Reality Lab at USC's Institute for Creative Technologies, to learn about holograms. And I started by asking whether the holograms have made the concept of live performance mean something very different from what we're used to.
Sure. I think what's interesting is there's a broader question now being posed of what constitutes live music or live performance. But in some ways, you can think about this as an extension of concert films. So for instance, in my younger days, I can remember when groups of us would go to the midnight movie to see The Song Remains the Same, Led Zeppelin, or Jimmy Plays Berkeley. And so this is an example of, you know, somebody who you maybe love the recordings and maybe they died before you got a chance to see them live or the band is not touring anymore, to experience what their live performance was, but that was on then a flat screen. So in some ways you can think of this as digital allowing the next generation of people to experience a live performance of somebody that is essentially pre-recorded. I think where it starts to get weird is, you know, we understand that a movie or a film is an archival artifact and that we're viewing this and it's on a screen. When you do the hologram, and actually they're not technically holograms, there's a lot of people who will argue about what's a hologram and what's not. Most of these live appearances use what's called the Pepper's Ghost technique, which has been around for about 100 years. But this idea of a sort of three-dimensional floating version of the performer starts to beg some questions about, well, if you can do that, then what other manipulations can you do? And would the performer wanted to have done this gig? And for the ones that, who are alive and still have some control over their image and control over their body of work, they may be able to say yes, no, but for the artists who have passed away, you know, I think you start to ask questions of, for instance, if you had a holographic version of Neil Young, who has come out as being fairly political and usually more towards the liberal side, you know, once he passes away, could a conservative political candidate use his hologram at one of their fundraiser events? Hmm.
And now let's get into to some of the technical aspects of this, Todd, because I was surprised when you said their technology they're using has been around for 100 years in some of these cases. So is there incentive to advance this technology, and do you think it'll happen? What would that technology look like?
There absolutely is incentive, and you can think of the broader field of this around the questions of telepresence. So right now, you know, Skype and video chat is being used by businesses and being used by individuals to try and replace the telephone or add a more immersive experience. And there's been a ton of work in labs. Our labs have worked on a variety of holographic solutions with rotating mirrors and you know, virtual characters that are instantiated on screens and projected onto, you know, dropping water droplets. There's been a lot of work to try and create true holograms, that sort of light coming together to create a light field that creates a representation. Part of that, I think, is driven by art. You know, the canonical example is Princess Leia in Star Wars, that hologram. I think for most of the people nowadays, that kind of is their touch point for what a hologram is. And technologically, you know, all of this stuff is getting better. We're moving from, you know, we moved from telegraph to telephone to radio to television to now augmented and virtual reality. And so holograms and being able to create new characters and recreate existing characters anywhere, anytime, and make them do anything we want, we actually have most of that technology already.
So, I mean, are there deeper pitfalls that actually worry you that are more than just sort of the basic things where, as humans, maybe we overreach a bit?
Sure. It's two jokes for you. One of them is it's always fun until someone loses an eye. and then what's the difference between an entertainer and a musician? An entertainer gets paid. So I think I'm a musician. I've been playing music most of my life since I was 8 years old. I gig. I don't pay the rent off of it because I can't afford to pay the rent given what most musicians make these days. So, you know, as a musician, this is troubling to me. And because this whole idea of what constitutes a live performance and this idea of human musicians having a musical conversation on stage and then extending that conversation to the humans in the audience, that's something that's profoundly analog. It's real time. There's no pause button. So live music has a certain magic to it. As an artist, you have to ask the question of, are we being honest with our fans? And where it really gets weird to me is that some of the fans don't really seem to care. So I think, again, you're going to see a spectrum of what people think constitutes live music. You're going to see a spectrum of what people find acceptable for recreating the dead and selling product and going on tour. But it does force us to reevaluate, what does it mean to be human and what does it mean to create art in the 21st century?
Todd Richmond is director of the Mixed Reality Lab at USC's Institute for Creative Technologies. He spoke with the show's Steve Goldstein.